shall overcome. We shall overcome. We shall overcome someday.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Michael Long, a professor of religious studies and peace and conflict studies at Elizabethtown College, and the author and editor of several books on civil rights, religion, and politics in mid-century America, including Marshalling Justice, the early civil rights letters of Thurgood Marshall, First Class Citizenship, the civil rights letters of Jackie Robinson, and his latest book, I Must Resist, Bayard Rustin's Life in Letters. Welcome to Background Briefing, Michael Long.
And it's great to be with you.
And it's an extraordinary story here about the person who really did was the principal organizer of the March on Washington 50 years ago, Bayard Rustin. And it's extraordinary to think that you have this African-American socialist pacifist who was openly gay in the 1950s having such an extraordinary link to all of these people like Martin Luther King and others who brought about the civil rights movement, and yet we know so little about him.
That's right. We know so little about him for a whole variety of reasons. He was not the leader of a civil rights organization. He wasn't a major leader in the black church, and he certainly wasn't a political leader. And those were the typical venues through which people rose and became leaders in the African-American community at this point. But Bayard was a behind-the-scenes strategist, and sometimes he was there willingly, and sometimes he was pushed to that area and kept there by his colleagues in the civil rights movement. So we know very little about him as well, although we're learning more, but we know little about him as well because his colleagues did a pretty darn good job of keeping him in the shadows, in the long shadows that they cast. And they did that primarily because of two reasons. One, his open gay sexuality, and two, his roots in communism.
So, nevertheless, though, he served as a mentor to Martin Luther King. He schooled King in Gandhi and nonviolence, and he introduced King to national leaders across the country. But I understand that there was a tension between him and King because of Bayard's sexuality. And then in 1960, Martin Luther King cut Bayard Rustin out of his inner circle after Adam Clayton Powell threatened to tell the media that King and Bayard Rustin were having a gay affair. Is that's the story?
Unfortunately, that is the story. In 1960, Bayard, the great organizer, was getting Martin Luther King and the great labor leader A. Philip Randolph together to announce marches on both political conventions that summer. And Adam Clayton Powell of Harlem, the Reverend and Representative Adam Clayton Powell of Harlem, got wind of it. And for a variety of reasons, he wasn't too interested in a march on the Democrats. And so he had an intermediary call King with the threat that Adam Clayton Powell would tell the media that King and Rustin were having a gay affair. Of course, they were not. I shouldn't say of course. They were not having a gay affair. The threat was hollow, but King was not a profile in courage on this point in 1960, and so at the urging of some conservative Baptist ministers in his own circle, as well as others, he cut Rustin out of the inner circle for two long years, and it really devastated Bayard, and I dare to say it was a brutal act of discrimination against him.
And again, I'm speaking with Michael Long, professor of religious studies and peace and conflict studies at Elizabethtown College and the author and editor of several books on civil rights, religion, and politics in mid-century America, including Marshalling Justice, the early civil rights letters of Thurgood Marshall, First Class Citizenship, the civil rights letters of Jackie Robinson, and his latest book, I Must Resist, Bayard Rustin's Life in Letters. And Bayard Rustin, of course, will be very soon awarded posthumously the Presidential Medal of Freedom by President Obama. So finally, this person who was a pacifist, who resisted the draft in World War II, who was openly gay, who played this extraordinary role behind the scenes, is going to be recognized. Tell me, though, about his arrest in California in 1953. What was that about?
In January 1953, just after the new year, Rustin traveled to Pasadena, California. He was there partly as a representative of the Fellowship of Reconciliation, which was the major pacifist organization at this point. And he was speaking to a group of university women in Pasadena. He gave a rousing lecture on world peace, by all accounts. And then later on, he decides to stroll the streets of Pasadena, and around 2:45 in the morning, he's arrested by some police officers for engaging in sex in a car in public. And he was arrested for that, and A.J. Musty, who was leading the FOR at that point, had had enough. A.J. Musty says that there were incidents prior to this, and he actually told Byard that if another one happened, he would fire him. And indeed, that's what happened. Byard got cut from the FOR, the Fellowship of Reconciliation. And that's another tragic story. He and Musty had been good friends for a long time, and Musty was a mentor, a father figure to him as well. But the nice thing about it is that the war resisters leg picked up Byard, and it's from there that he launched into the civil rights movement. Another good thing about this story is that A. Philip Randolph, the great labor leader, grew closer to Byard through these incidents, these tragic incidents that he suffered throughout his life. And even King wanted Byard back after he cut him in 1960. Byard often said that, "I love Dr. King, but he really couldn't organize a couple of vampires to go to a bloodbath." And that gives you some indication of what Byard meant to King. Rustin was a brilliant organizer, and King needed Rustin to transfer those dreams that King had in his head into everyday reality. He needed a brilliant tactician, somebody who knew the nuts and bolts of organizing and grassroots campaigns. And Byard had learned that at the Fellowship of Reconciliation. Rustin had also been part of the March on Washington movement that A. Philip Randolph started way back in the 1940s. So he had this rich tradition of organizing folks for equal justice under law.
And he sounds a little like Walter Reuther, who also, of course, was helpful in helping organize this March on Washington. But I take it the long and the short of it is, I'm talking about Walter Reuther in terms of his extraordinary accomplishments. You know, Reuther, for example, founded the Sierra Club, among many, many things, and Earth Day. So he's a remarkable man, and so apparently is Byard Rustin. But it was largely because of homophobia that he didn't get credit for organizing, along with Randolph, the March on Washington 50 years ago.
I think that's largely true. In fact, just before the march, Senator Strom Thurmond of South Carolina took to the Senate floor, and he brought up this arrest in Pasadena and accused Byard of being guilty of sexual perversion. And he announced this on the Senate floor, and the news media launched on that, and they asked the civil rights leaders what they thought about it. But this time, what's really interesting, Ian, this time the civil rights leaders, including King, rallied around Byard and depicted him as absolutely essential to the march. So that was a really interesting point in Byard's life. It was the first time he felt his colleagues in the civil rights movement rallying around him and supporting him in spite of what they considered to be a problem in his life and a problem for their lives as well. Finally, they were coming around, and he puts it at one point that they finally get a backbone.
So if Strom Thurmond, old tangerine hair, who'd never resisted a chance to pinch the backside of a female senator or ended up having an African-American illegitimate child, did J. Edgar Hoover also go after Byard?
Yes, J. Edgar Hoover did go after Byard. He got permission from Robert F. Kennedy, the Attorney General under the Kennedy administration, to tap Byard and to conduct surveillance. And, you know, Robert F. Kennedy wasn't a big fan of Byard and said some disparaging remarks about him. And Hoover certainly was not a big fan of Byrd as well, which makes the Presidential Medal of Freedom all the sweeter, doesn't it? Because at once, before Byrd was depicted as an enemy of the government, an enemy of the state, somebody who's subverting good order, and now the White House is bestowing the Presidential Medal of Freedom on him. I love the turnaround. The irony of history, as they say.
And again, I'm speaking with Michael Long, whose latest book is I Must Resist, Byrd Rustin's Life in Letters. And Byrd Rustin was the principal organizer of the March on Washington for Jobs and Justice 50 years ago. And we, of course, we all recall, at least those of us who lived through the 60s, recall the how much Martin Luther King was vilified by the radical left and by the emerging Black Power movement. People like Malcolm X and others, not that Malcolm X ever referred to him in a disparaging way, but others did, calling Martin Luther King Uncle Tom, etc. How did Byrd Rustin do in that regard? Because in spite of the fact that the government vilified him and saw him as an enemy and a communist and all this stuff, Byrd Rustin refused to condemn the Vietnam War, and he was also critical of the Black Power movement.
He was critical of the Black Power movement. He was critical of Malcolm X as well. He and Malcolm debated several times in the early 1960s, including at Howard University and on public radio and so forth. But by June 1964, Byrd starts to pull back from that. In fact, he refuses to debate Malcolm any longer. And that's partly because just before that, Malcolm had called for the formation of rifle clubs among African Americans who weren't being properly protected by their local police authorities. And Byrd was very upset by that. He considered that call to be outside the mainstream of the civil rights movement. He also was concerned about Malcolm X's inclinations toward racial separatism at points. And Byrd was part of the old guard. You know, the old guard of the civil rights movement squared off against Malcolm X and the Black Power movement from 64 on. And so you have Byrd Rustin and Martin Luther King and Roy Wilkins and Whitney Young and some others who are part of the old guard, and they're in favor of full integration and nonviolence the whole way. And they're pitting themselves against Malcolm X and the Black Power movement, especially on those points. And it's really a battle for the soul of the civil rights movement. It's one of the best stories, I think, from 64 on. But yeah, Malcolm and Byrd certainly did not see eye to eye, that's for sure. On Vietnam, you're right. Byrd did not become a leader of the peace movement. In fact, he was vilified by his radical pacifist friends, who really wanted him to assume a leading role. And they still think that he could have done a marvelous job as the leader of the pacifist movement during the Vietnam War. But Rustin decided that he would put his marbles into organizing coalitions with powerful politicians who might be able to move massive resources towards economic justice for poor whites and African Americans. And so at this point, Rustin is shifting from protest to politics, as he put it in the 1965 article. He wants to move off the streets and into the quarters of power, build coalitions with powerful politicians, not Dixiecrats, but liberal Democrats, so that he can win economic justice. It's a controversial move to this day.
Well, but
and
that
so this is radical path. Go ahead, dude.
Well, I'm going to say that I think that's extraordinary prescient of him, because you know I've been talking to people lately about this idea that really, in many ways, it serves the interests of reactionaries in this country to separate race from class. That we really need affirmative action for class in as much as race, and that. Racism and division is a way to distract people, particularly poor whites, how much they have in common with African Americans and Latinos, since the middle class is being eviscerated and the only people that are winners in the last several decades have been the billionaires.
Well, I think that's a great point. I agree with you on that. And we have to remember that Byard was a labor leader. A. Philip Randolph was a labor leader, head of the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters. These guys have been concerned about economic justice since the 30s. Byard was part of the Young Communist League in the late 1930s. In the 1940s, he becomes focused on economic justice as well. And that continues up through and past the March on Washington. I'll say this as well. I think that Byard is somebody who really encouraged King to tie the issues of race and class together as well. And King begins to do that, especially after the March on Washington, and says things like, what good is segregation if I can't go to a restaurant? What good is desegregation if I can't go to a desegregated restaurant and buy a hamburger? That shows partly the influence of Byard Rustin and his fierce embrace of democratic socialism. Byard Rustin was a proud democratic socialist, always tied issues of race and class together. He saw them as inseparable.
Well, Michael Long, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
What a pleasure, Ian. Thank you so much.
Again, I've been speaking with Michael Long, who's a professor in Religious Studies and Peace and Conflict Studies at Elizabethtown College and the author and editor of several books on civil rights, religion, and politics in mid-century America, including Marshalling Justice, The Early Civil Rights Letters of Thurgood Marshall, First Class Citizenship, The Civil Rights Letters of Jackie Robinson, and his latest book, I Must Resist, Byard Rustin's Life in Letters. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the Syrian Electronic Army's cyber attack on the New York Times and Twitter.
But they pinch themselves and squeal, and they'll know that it's for real the hour that the ship comes in. And they'll raise their hands, said, we'll meet all your demands, but we'll shout from the bow, your days are numbered. And like Pharaoh's tribe, they'll be drowned in the tide, and like Goliath, they'll become.